you're supposed to wait. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're taking up the issue of brachos. So as we know, the Chachamim composed, ordained for different occasions, all of which remind a person, signify for a person, the fact that we live in a universe which expresses the Chachma, with which the universe was created, the Chachmas Hashem, and so forth. So, of course, a person can look at anything and study it, and he'll see tremendous ideas. But they reserved it for certain phenomena, which make an impression upon a person. If you see the great sea, or you see mountains, beautiful mountains, so that has a certain impact upon a person. And when he's in, you know, creates a certain aesthetic emotion, a certain sense of awe at the magnitude or the beauty. So when he's in that state, he should reflect, where does all this come from? He should recognize that it has a design and there's so much wisdom in the universe, and he should give praise to God. Now, one of the things that they ordained requires a bracha is someone who comes in contact, personal contact, with chachamim, with wise people. In a sense, the greatest manifestation of the fact that there is a creator, a being of infinite wisdom, it really should be man himself, Adam himself. The greatest source of Kiddush Hashem, the sanctification of God, should really come from the phenomenon of Adam, of mankind. Because of all the beings in existence, we're saying that the various phenomena of nature reflect wisdom. Hashemayim Misapim Kavod Keil. The heavens declare the glory of God. Which is to say that if you study, you'll see that it operates according to fixed laws, which he speaks, the source of infinite wisdom. But really, of all the different things in creation, the being that most exemplifies or is a reflection of the existence of the Supreme Being is the one that was created in, so to speak, the image. There's a being that actually maintains and expresses wisdom, understanding, chachma. The fact that there's something outside the framework of the universe. In the framework of the universe, all you see is everything functions according to laws, or everything functions in accordance to with instinct. Here's a being that actually manifests wisdom. It's a source. Adam is a source of wisdom and understanding, and has control over the instinctual. That's the whole basis of Kiddush Hashem. That the sanctification of God really should come about through Adam. When a person behaves in a manner which whoever observes him would say, this is different, this is not an animal, this is a being which has a different component, something of the divine, so to speak. So therefore, there's a bracha ordained when you encounter chacham, wise people. And it doesn't make any difference whether they're the wise people of Israel, Torah scholars. It really doesn't. There is a distinction. There's two different brachos. One is for a Torah scholar, and one is for a non-Torah scholar, though, someone of tremendous wisdom. But the wisdom is not in the area of Torah. It really doesn't matter whether it's Jew, Gentile. That wouldn't be the factor. It may be expressed that way. It's expressed as Chachmei Israel. The wise people of Israel. The wise people of Israel are the Torah scholars. That's what we're talking about. For example, however, let's say someone like an Einstein. He would be someone that would require the bracha. But the bracha would not be because you're seeing a Torah scholar. He would be like Chachmei Ha'umos, the scholars of the nations, even though he's a Jew. Because it's a certain type of a scholar. Now, you would have thought that the basic idea for the bracha is that when you see such a being, it should cause you to, what's the source of the chachma? It reflects upon God. It's only because of God. God is a being of infinite wisdom, and God enables, God grants us the opportunity to partake of His wisdom. It's His wisdom. So you would have thought, if that's the case, fine, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't make a difference. Why should it make a difference whether it's a Torah scholar or whether it's a non-Torah scholar? Because it's about wisdom. It's the fact that man obtains wisdom. And we recognize the significance of secular wisdom. However, if you study it, you'll see that there are two distinct brachos. Let's review them right now. Now it says that one who sees a, we'll start with a secular scholar, a non-Torah scholar. So, by the way, I'm using the word scholar loosely. Don't make any mistake. I'm not referring to scholar in the conventional sense that he has a PhD and so on and so forth. That does not render him a chacham one way or the other. Nor if he doesn't have any degrees at all. It's totally irrelevant. We don't go by that criteria. We go by the fact that if the person is a chacham, someone who's distinguished. For example, as I said, a person like Einstein is a great chacham. There are other great chacham. I'm not going to go now into all the criteria. Well, what if this person is a great chacham, but he's not recognized? Well, I would say if you're convinced that he has great chachma, that's sufficient for you. For others that don't know, then they don't make a bracha. Where it's a universally accepted thing, that this person is a great chacham, so then you make the bracha. But I'm talking about a real chacham here. I'm not talking about someone that's written 25 books and is considered scholarly. Again, the fact that the person is considered an authority, in today's society, you have to be very careful. A lot of people are considered authorities, and they're consulted, and they write books, and they are the experts. However, that does not really mean that they have real chachma, in my opinion, because I've heard a lot of these people speak. When you hear them speaking, it can be a lot of nonsense. Absolute nonsense. And the reason, how do you have then, do you explain the fact that they have such a reputation? Well, the key is, amongst whom do they have the reputation? Generally speaking, it's amongst the, today, you have a popular culture. A person can obtain a reputation due to the fact that he's very popular and he says things that the people want to hear and he has media appeal. So he can go on television shows. That's a dangerous development, especially in terms of Judaism, because you have many of these so-called rabbis that are ordinary, they can be ordinary rabbis, but they're not great chachamim. However, they write books and they become controversial or they become popular and there's a whole circuit, and then they become famous. So a person today can, so to speak, develop or even purchase a reputation for being a brilliant, outstanding authority in Judaism. Let's take Judaism. And you would listen to his ideas and you say it's ridiculous. Or you might say it's not ridiculous, but it's ordinary. It's nothing special. You have to bear in mind that today there's a huge audience of people who have no knowledge whatsoever. So anybody who's appealing, who's articulate, who knows how to express himself publicly, has the possibility of creating a reputation for himself, which is not deserving of. It's not in line with the reality. That creates a big problem in Judaism, because many of these so-called authorities then, for whatever reasons, possibly to further their careers more, will come out with very controversial rulings in halacha, in accordance with the tide, in accordance with the desire of the people, so to speak, to break down certain areas, certain categories, and because of their reputation, so people will say, look, this person's an authority too. You may disagree with them, but they accord to that person a status which is not really warranted in terms of true Torah knowledge. But that's not what we're going into today. While I'm on the subject, I'm mentioning that to you. The only way that a person can be established as a real chacham, a genuine chacham, well, there's two ways. First of all, a Talmud chacham himself. If a person is a Talmud chacham, has genuine expertise and knowledge, then you can read the person's writings or you can listen to their classes and you can tell for yourself if this person's a chacham. If you're not on the level to make that determination, then reputation is a factor. But let me make it very clear. The reputation that this person has as being an outstanding authority must be one which comes from authorities in the field themselves. That is to say, a person can write books on medicine, popular medicine, and so on and so forth, and he can be on television on a program every week, and everybody thinks this person is the ultimate authority. Doctors themselves will laugh at that. They'll say, yeah, for the masses, he's popular. If the genuine medical establishment, the doctors themselves, will hold him up as being a leading doctor, so then you can accord him that status. That's the only barometer. Even then, it's possible that he's not as great as he's made out to be, but that, what can you do? The same is true, for example, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zichrono Lebracha, or the Rav, any gadol. How does a person become a gadol? Who gave him the title of gadol? It means to say that he was accepted by, who was he accepted by? Over a course of many years, he wrote his tshuvos, or by the Rav, people went to his shiurim. Who went to his shiurim? Talmidei Chachamim. All the Talmidei Chachamim that went to hear the Rav acknowledged he's a great Talmid Chacham. There's no question about it. And all those who studied the tshuvos of Rav Moshe, he was accepted and he was acknowledged by the leading Torah authorities. To the contrary, the ordinary people wouldn't even know what to say. They wouldn't be able to figure it out. And the same would be true of the ordinary individual. I mean, sometimes the Rav gave shiurim for so-called balabatim. Yeah, but I mean, they weren't ignoramuses. They weren't necessarily great talmid chacham, but he would give it. That would be a popular shiur. I don't know how well they were able to follow. I don't know. But when you're talking about his real abstract, advanced Talmudical shiurim, what the masses wouldn't even know what it's talking about. There's no way that a true gadol could establish a reputation amongst the masses. They don't understand him. It's like a great abstract physicist, like Einstein talking relativity on television every week. How many people would understand what he's talking about? Yet everybody in the world knows he's a genius. Well, how do you know he's a genius? You don't understand the first thing he says. Well, the answer is that his reputation was established by the great scientists, by the leading scientists. If all the physicists acknowledge that he's a genius, so then he's a genius. You can accept it. You can operate on that basis. Today, you have to be on guard because of this new phenomenon of the popular authority, who, because of the nature of our culture, is able to achieve a reputation which is basically established in terms of the masses. He's popular with the masses. And that's the essence of his achievements. Person writes bestsellers. Person writes bestsellers, it can't be true chachma. It's got to be distilled at best. It's got to be pleasing. All these theological books on major questions of good and evil and so forth and the universe and why does God do this and why. If these books become bestsellers, there's a reason for it, because it's pleasing to the masses, which means it's emotional. So that's why I caution everybody that in today's society, what the media terms as being an authority or an expert and so forth, or a genius or brilliant, just means that this person has achieved a certain level of success in an arena which is not really based upon true chachma. Perhaps the best example of this phenomenon is there's a new rise of popularity of Kabbalah. Kabbalah is sort of the rage. And then you have, of course, it's a subject that there's nobody out there that really truly understands. It's something which requires, it's the most esoteric, most advanced metaphysical ideas. And we do not have a genuine masorah, a genuine system of transmitting it. And as Rabbi Chaik pointed out, that these are the types of ideas that you're not permitted, if you do understand them, to discuss publicly, because they contain secrets and they can be very dangerous to people that are not tutored, that are not prepared, enlightened in the area. Nevertheless, today there's a bunch of charlatans out there that were able to market and package and put together a whole system of Kabbalah, because you're dealing with ignoramuses. And so you have today experts, this person, he's an expert on Kabbalah. What does that mean, he's an expert on Kabbalah? So he doesn't understand the first thing about Kabbalah. Oh, what does expert mean? He writes books, he's written 10 books on the subject, he has an institute, he gives lectures, he's an expert. All of the accidents, which are not even truly accidents, because if a person is an expert, he doesn't have to write a book, and he doesn't have to be a lecturer. But even if you should say that it is, that great chachamim write books, even if we should accept that, but not everybody that writes books is a great chacham. The point is, anybody can write a book. Anybody. And anybody can get a book published. So that's not a big deal. Some of the worst pieces of trash in history, some of the greatest dangers, some of the greatest calamities are coming about through books. Did you ever hear something called Mein Kampf?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By Hitler. That was Hitler's book. Yamach Shema. Huh? That was published millions and millions and millions and millions of copies.
The protocols of the Elders of Zion.
Yeah. So you can get any trash written, published. But besides, aside from that, there's a whole industry of pornographic, romance, novels, anything you want. What determines whether it will get published or not is one issue. Is there a market? Market. Because it's an industry, it's a business. That's all. This is a critique of the contemporary Jewish community, in my opinion, that they've completely lost the idea of genuine Torah study. And they fall into this pattern of looking up to authorities. Well, this is the masses, just accepting what people say without questioning. First of all, it's not true, even if the person that's speaking is a genuine authority. If he's a real authority, you're not just supposed to accept what the person says, you're supposed to question it. We went through that in the Rav Avram ben Aramam. The Rambam's son, the Hakdama that he wrote, he didn't write it, it wasn't written as Hakdama. He wrote it as a review of the Agadas. He makes the point that even if he quotes the Gemara, that if a great, great scholar says something, he has to support it, and it has to make sense, and if it doesn't make sense, we're not going to accept it, even if Yeshua said it. Unless, of course, we're talking about something that he's saying as a Nebuah, that's something else, or it's a Masor, that's something else, but he's saying this is his idea. If a person states an idea on the basis that this is the way he thinks about a subject, we don't accept it. Unless it makes sense to us, we definitely have a right to critique, to criticize, to question. And we don't assume that he has to be right because he's an authority. But the Jewish world has drifted far, far away from this. I remember a couple of years ago, I'm not going to mention any names, but you probably would recognize someone who's a rabbi, but very well known because he's very influential, has a very significant position, and he writes books, and so on and so forth, was giving a lecture on the subject of Hasidus. It's one of the books he had written about. And there was one of the fellows from the yeshiva who was there and had some challenging questions. Everybody else's questions. You know, you go to these lectures. In my opinion, most of those types of popular lectures are pretty meaningless in terms of gaining real knowledge. Because the person has his prepared lecture, he glosses over some subject, you know, if he's good, he knows how to put it together and make it smooth and so on and so forth. Or maybe you pick up some information. I'm not going to get into an analysis of every lecture. And then there's question and answer. But most of the time it's meaningless because the questions are softballs. And the answer is just cute, and you know, it's a good answer, a cute answer, but you really can't go very far. If a real debate, if you really caught him in a contradiction and you really want to clarify the point, you're not going to have that. He's just going to, he's got the advantage because he's clever, he's done this before, he knows how to evade, he knows how to brush it aside, whatever the case, and move on. So it's not really an exercise in gaining any kind of real understanding. But one of the fellows from the yeshiva was at this particular lecture, and he had some tough questions. And you can really sense the anger of the audience against him. That he was being disrespectful. Because he was asking tough questions and not accepting what the person was saying. Afterwards he told me some of those things, and he was 100% right. It was absolute nonsense what this person was saying. And instead of people being upset at the nonsense, they're more upset at the person that's raising the questions. Spoiling the experience for everybody. Let's make believe we're really learning something significant over here.